The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
Minister for Justice Helen McEntee is with us in our Dublin studio. Minister, I want to get to the body cam rollout in just a moment. First, can we talk about that High Court ruling, though, that the current state response to the needs of international protection applicants is in breach of the Charter of the Fundamental Rights of the European Union. It's quite grim in what it's saying. What's the government's response?
Well, look, this is obviously a very recent ruling, so we need to take the time to look at it and to assess it. What the judge was very clear on is that it's not for lack of government trying, and obviously a huge amount of effort has and is being made over the last number of years to house tens of thousands of people. And in particular, post-COVID, we've seen an astronomical increase in people coming to the country and seeking international protection. That's on top of obviously the tens of thousands of people who fled Ukraine, where a war is still ongoing. So every effort has been made, and that was acknowledged by the court. But at the same time, we acknowledge, and Minister O'Gorman, who's rolling out the accommodation and we're working closely with him, acknowledges that there have been people in more recent months where we haven't been able to accommodate. So every effort has been made, not just to continue to work with private providers, but most importantly, and looking, you know, in the years ahead, because this, you know, this issue is not going to change. We need to have state-provided accommodation. We need to have larger accommodation centres. And then on my part, obviously, as Minister for Justice, we need to make sure that the immigration system itself, the processing of applications, how quickly we can do it, expanding the system, that that continues. And that really has been a priority for me for the last 2 years, investing in the staff, investing in the teams, investing in quicker processes from the very start to the very finish. And that work has to continue. And, you know, that will help address the problems here as well. But, you know, we're doing a huge amount. And at the same time, I acknowledge and recognise the ruling here. And obviously, we all want to do better.
I'm going to come back to the issues that your department is facing when it comes to processing and the resources you're putting into that. But given that we have been found in breach of Article 1 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, is the state exposed here to potential claims that can be brought forward by asylum seekers who haven't been given accommodation?
Well, look, our number one objective is to provide people with accommodation first and foremost. And that has been the objective, you know, for the last number of years and pre-COVID as well, even there when we had lower numbers. We have been able to, I think, deal with, in particular, those who are most vulnerable. We have a particular system that Minister O'Gorman has put in place where people have not been provided with accommodation immediately, that there is a system to identify where people are particularly vulnerable. And that in itself, over the last few months, has housed hundreds of people who otherwise would have been on the street. So our focus needs to be on providing accommodation first and foremost. But there is also financial support being provided where that's not possible. And there are different formats and there are different types of funding that people are receiving, whether it's an international protection applicant or somebody who has arrived from Ukraine as well. But, you know, we take our obligation very seriously. There is an obligation on us, as there should be and as we will always adhere to provide that protection to people who seek it and who need it.
But we're in breach. That's quite clear. From the court. Yeah, the court says we're in breach today, so there has to be consequences for that breach, one would imagine.
And it's not for lack of wanting or trying. And I can't stress that enough. Every single effort that can be made is being made. But it is an unprecedented time. And I think the vast majority of people recognise and acknowledge that in the last 2 years alone, over 100,000 people have been housed. At the moment, there are 30,000 international protection applicants alone that have been housed and that we are providing accommodation for. And we need to do more, and we fully accept that. But this is something that we take very seriously. And so, you know, as I said at the outset, this is a very recent ruling. It's just happened. We have to examine it. Minister O'Gorman has to explore it. And we as a government have to look to see what more we can do to address this. But, you know, we all take this very seriously. The world is a very scary place for some people at the moment. There are a lot of conflicts happening in Africa and the Middle East and further afield. People are not able to live in their home due to climate change and so many other factors. And people just want a better life. We want to be able to provide it to those who are entitled to us. And, you know, I can't be any, you know, we all want to do our best here.
I've got to move on to body cams, if I can, because they have been already out and about in Dublin. Pier Street and Kevin Street and Store Street stations in Dublin have been using these cameras, and now they have been deployed to Henry Street in Limerick as well. Slightly different, because we're still at the proof of concept phase. What's the reaction of the Gardaí been to the addition of these cameras, Minister?
Well, interestingly, just even walking to the studio here in Dublin, I walked past two Gardaí who were interacting with people on the street, and they were wearing body cameras. So it's wonderful to see them out and about on the beat. The reaction has been really positive, I have to say. They were rolled out just over a month and a half ago in Dublin as the first phase of what you've said is a proof of concept. So we're rolling out in three different cities, Dublin, Limerick, which happened today, and Waterford, which will be in a few weeks. And they'll all have different types of technology. So the camera that was launched today is slightly different in that people can see themselves because it reflects the actual video that's been recording, slightly different to the one that we have in Dublin, different types of technology being used. And at the end of this proof of concept, the Gardaí will identify, having engaged with the members themselves, the best type of camera, and then we'll roll it out, most importantly, for every single member. But this is so important for so many reasons, and I'll give you maybe two or three examples of the feedback we've gotten to date. Firstly, in keeping Gardaí safe. So we already have very clear examples of where Gardaí have been engaged in situations where they could escalate, where there have been aggravated scenes where the minute they put on the cameras and tell people that they're putting on the cameras, behaviours change and they're able to resolve a situation in a much calmer manner than possibly would have without. You also have had examples where Gardaí were accused of engaging in certain types of behaviours, but when the footage was looked back on, it was very clear that that hadn't happened. So not just protecting Gardaí physically, but also their own their work and their livelihood as well. Yeah. You also
they have to physically turn on the camera though, and does that not leave a little bit of risk there that something happens and the camera wasn't rolling and the guard is then left somewhat exposed because they didn't activate it? It seems that there's a step that has to be taken actively that may be not in the best interests of public scrutiny.
So very importantly, these cameras have a 30-second feedback. So it's working constantly on a loop where it doesn't record until the member presses record. And the member will only ever press record where they know a crime is being or may have been committed. At that point, it records back the previous 30 seconds. So I was shown an example today where a person had been stopped. They had identified through their number plate recognition on the Garda card that this person didn't have insurance. They obviously weren't clear about that, but when they went up and asked that individual, they said very clearly they were driving without insurance. The officer knew that a crime had been committed. They were able to put on the camera and it went back 30 seconds and grabbed that information, which is obviously vital. But also that person's behaviour when they automatically saw that they were being recorded changed, their demeanour changes. So you're straight away, you're gathering evidence, okay. You're making very clear evidence. It's already been accepted in the courts in Dublin, but also you're protecting Gardaí and you're de-escalating situations. So today in Limerick, we've rolled out the second batch. Waterford will be in a couple of weeks. We'll then start to look at obviously which is best here. And then most importantly, every member in the country should have this. It's so important, as you say, as part of their armoury. It's a really important tool. It's really effective already and really delighted that we have the second pilot launched today.
You mentioned that it's being used in courts already, which is, I suppose, part of its evidential value. But when we look at the United States, when we look at across the water in the UK, it can be it's significant at times when the police have been accused of doing something that the camera can be, the footage can be shown and give a different context. It's a regular occurrence in America, for example, if there's any question over police behaviour that in the public interest, they release the footage. Can we do that here? Is there a different standard? And ultimately, will the public potentially lose a bit of faith if they don't see these videos where there is an allegation perhaps against a member of An Garda Síochána Síochána?
Well, firstly, I mean, absolutely, this works both ways. And there's very clear protocols that have been set out as to when a member has to, and I say a member of An Garda Síochána has to turn on the camera. If they don't do so, they have to provide a reason why they haven't. But also that footage as well can be looked at not just by the member that's turned on the camera, but by their superiors and their officers as well, if you have a case that's been taken. So
can GSOC look at them?
Absolutely, yes. So there's very clear protocols, and if they're misused, and importantly today, when we were given examples and demonstrations, you have very clear identification of the Garda member whose camera it is. It's a watermark. It's in a number of different places to access that information. So the question was asked this morning, what if somebody records something and puts that out as well? There's a very clear way of identifying if somebody goes to that length. And obviously, I mean, there's disciplinary procedures, there's mechanisms where somebody does not comply with the rules and regulations here. So it's here to protect the public as well, because it, you know, has a 100%, there's no way to adjust this. You know, so much of what we see now in social media, it's adjusted, it's amended, it's changed. We're not sure if what we're looking at is real or not, whereas these cameras cannot be adjusted or changed or amended. The information is uploaded onto a system and then it can be accessed and you know exactly who's accessing it as well.
I want to turn to events in Southport, which you will have been following as well as everybody else here. The murders of three young girls, and there is somebody before the courts who appeared there today. But it's the aftermath that I want to talk to you about, because I found very disturbing parallels between what happened in Dublin and Parnell Square and the riot that followed an attack on young children, and what happened in Southport, where young children were attacked and we had a riot as well. Do you see similarities between the two, and do they worry you?
Absolutely, is the honest answer. And I know you've asked about the riot itself, but my heart goes out to all of their families. I can't even begin to imagine what they're going through. And we had something similar, obviously, at Christmas. And while nobody lost their life, we have a young girl who's very seriously injured still. So it is devastating to see this happen again. What happened afterwards is very similar in that a huge amount of disinformation was spread online, obviously, as to, you know, the nature of the attack or the reason behind it. In saying that, that should never be a reason for the types of scenes that we then saw afterwards, whether it was in Dublin, November, or in Southport in the last few days. There's no reason for people to take to the streets, to be violent, to behave in that type of way. It puts other people at risk, really, and it's counterproductive if the objective is to keep people safe, going out and rioting and looting and causing that type of disruption. So I think, you know, our own Gardaí have seen some difficult scenes over the last number of months and weeks, and I think they have always responded in the most appropriate way. Their overall objective is always to keep the peace, to de-escalate the situation.
Graduated policing, as we know. But when we see situations like arose in Coolock last week, where we had very violent scenes, where we have buildings being burnt down with relative impunity, and I know the Gardaí are continuing to investigate this, I mean, it gives rise to the question, is the law robust enough for what is a new challenge that we haven't experienced before in the state?
Well, we've had quite a significant number of arrests, not just from Coolock last week, but you are up on 50 arrests now from November last year. Gardaí have had a huge amount of work to do, sifting through thousands of hours of CCTV footage. While they didn't have body cameras in November, they had body cameras 2 weeks ago, and already there's 48 pieces of evidence have been logged simply from that particular incident. In the last year and a half alone, there's been over €3 million spent on helmets, on protective gear, on shields, on boots, on incapacitant spray, a huge amount of focus making sure. And look, we don't want to be in a situation where these type of scenes are commonplace. At the same time, my job is to make sure the Gardaí have the equipment, have the tools that they need, but also have the laws that they need so that people can be prosecuted for the various different types of offences. And certainly Gardaí have been. I had a chance to speak to many of the members in Coolock on Monday, and there's a huge amount of work underway to make sure that anybody who was responsible for those type of violent scenes, from arson, which is a very serious offence, to public disorder or public order offences as well. And that work is well underway. And I hope it sends a very clear message to anybody thinking of getting involved in these type of scenarios that there are very severe penalties at the end of the day.
But we have to be conscious as well. And there was a very interesting study came out from the Electoral Commission yesterday. They said there has been a massive increase in the number of voters who believe conspiracy theories around immigration in Ireland. And one of the startling findings was that 22% of Irish voters believe that politicians want more immigration to bring in, quote, obedient voters who will vote for them in future elections. Knowing politicians as I do, I'm amazed that they'd have the wherewithal to actually coordinate on that. But at the same time, if that theory is taking root, societally, we have a problem.
I'm not sure how to take that last comment. I'd be honest, I'm worried about that type of statistic. That's a lot of people that would believe that. I think social media, the role that it plays now and the fact that so many people only get their information from social media is a huge challenge. And we know from algorithms, we know that you can look at one video of a particular viewpoint on something, and within a matter of moments, the algorithms point you in the direction and you end up down a rabbit hole where the only thing that you are looking at is that one point of view. Whereas so many other people will, you know, they'll listen to the radio, they'll listen to news talk, they'll listen to the news on the TV, they'll read newspapers and other forms. And that is how you get a formed opinion on it. But for people to have such absolute views on things, social media has a role to play and has been a huge part in that. And it's not just in Ireland we're seeing this type of thing happen. It's right across the world. So, I mean, we have an obligation, and I have an obligation as a politician to engage with everyone, those with different and opposing views to me, making sure that we engage in open and honest debate, making sure that we protect our media, making sure that sources where factual information is being provided, that that can be protected, but also our social media companies in particular now through Commission a Man, which is our new online safety commissioner, that harmful content, that illegal content, that it's taken down, and the companies that don't comply, that they are held responsible. We also have a misinformation strategy or disinformation strategy that's being developed at the moment. But I think it's a really challenging space. I think it's a very difficult space to try and get right.
Do you think little old Ireland can't hold these international social media companies to account? I mean, they played a huge role in what happened in Dublin. They played a huge role in what happened in Southport. I mean, we're fighting against faceless organisations that are not based in our jurisdiction and have no responsibilities here. I mean, how can we take them on realistically?
Well, look, many of the large companies are actually based in Ireland, and I think we have a responsibility to make sure that our laws are robust. We are one of the few countries to develop and put in place a new online safety commissioner, so there's a lot of focus on Ireland in that respect. But, you know, my colleague Minister Martin and all of us as a government were absolutely committed to making sure that the commissioner has the resources, has the ability to be able to hold these companies accountable. I mean, these are huge multinational corporations and they have a responsibility, not just legally, but a social responsibility to make sure that they protect their users and that they don't in any way contribute to the type of violence that we've seen on our streets. And unfortunately, I think so much of that is coming through information that's been received on social media.
All right, Helen McEntee, Minister for Justice, thank you for joining us in The Hard Shoulder.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.